Why are we seeing such an uptick in divorces?
A lot of people don't understand the fundamentals of what is a marriage. What we've seen is an uptick of people that are not committed to marriage. Some of these people are growing up in a lap of luxury, running throughout the world and whatnot. These kids never got the word no said to them. They're used to getting everything and they're living a very high life. And then all of a sudden marriage comes to reality, you know, and now all of a sudden you don't necessarily have the same access to money. When you're dealing with those challenges, if people don't know how to deal with the challenges, they just say, you know what, I'm out.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Meaningful People podcast. This Tisha B'Av, which is just a couple of days away, an amazing, amazing new film is coming out by the one and only Rabbi Yoel Gold. The title of that film is Coming Home. We all are yearning to go home to Eretz Yisrael. We want our hostages to come home. We want the entire Klal Yisrael to come home back to Yiddishkeit. And that's what this film is all about. Rabbi Gold puts in so much effort, time, money to creating an absolute masterpiece. And that's why I am here to tell you to head to hashkifa.com. That is hashkifa.com and purchase this film. Purchase this film for yourself, your family, your friends, gift it to people. And it's an amazing way to spend this day of Tisha B'Av at hashkifa.com. Watch this amazing film. This week we sat down with Eli Goldbaum. Eli is somebody who really dedicates much of his life and his time to mending marriages, some of them on the verge of divorce, some of them in places where they think they need to get divorced. And ultimately, he is a mediator. He is somebody who devotes his time as a chesed to mediate divorces. And his line, like you'll hear in this podcast, is whether it's shalom bias or shalom divorce, let's just do it peacefully. And we did an episode a few weeks ago with Rabbi Vigler about the kids that come from divorce and how it could be so painful. Well, this is another part of that conversation with Eli Goldbaum on how to prevent divorces. What can we do to make sure we're getting ahead of the problem? And in addition to that, if, God forbid, it needs to happen, how can that happen in a way that will, you know, take care of the children, take care of the family? So this episode with Eli Goldbaum is a really, really important one. And we're airing it this week, Tisha B'Av is this week. Destruction of the Jewish home is something that none of us enjoy to see. And it should be discussed this episode that we all learn from this. We should all build a Mikdash Ma'at in our own homes. This episode, I want to thank a couple people. Shimi J, who made this possible from Sensible, who really was very vocal about us doing an episode like this. I really want to thank you for all that you do for Meaningful Minute, for Meaningful People, and the entire organization. Thank you, Shimi, for your continued support. And of course, Isaac Newman, sponsoring this episode, L'zecher Nishmas, his mother, Ruchama Peralmakolea Bas Aryaleib, the things derived from this episode. Shabbat Shalom for your holy, holy mother's neshama. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And of course, like I said last week, there is a sponsored for this episode, an ad from Kol El Chabad. Make sure to head to the app store on your phone right now and download the Pushka app. The Pushka app, it's unbelievable. And especially now during the 9 days, heading into Tisha B'Av, we all want Shmira. We want Shmira for our families. We want Shmira for our loved ones, for our Chayalim, for our soldiers, for the families that we know living in Eretz Yisrael. Donate, donate, donate. You hit that donate button. It's $5. It's a dollar. Every single day you have a Pushka on your phone. You just donate just amounts of money. And ultimately you're giving to Kol El Chabad. Kol El Chabad is an amazing organization that takes care of Israel's needy. So continue to donate on the Pushka app. It is so simple. It is so easy. I did it. And I think you should too. The Pushka app. Just head to pushka.cc/meaningful. pushka.cc/meaningful. And now enjoy this episode. You are listening to the Meaningful People Podcast.
The podcast featuring our nation's most impactful, influential,
and meaningful people. We are here joined by Eli Goldbaum. Thank you so much. It's a long time coming, this episode. Really, really appreciate it. We're going to discuss a topic that we began discussing a few weeks ago with Rabbi Vigler. We sort of tackled one element of it. And I'm kind of feeling this episode might even air a little bit before Tisha B'Av, like this time of year. I personally feel like the divorce scene is just like it's the destruction of a Jewish home. And on Tisha B'Av, we mourn all destruction. We mourn the Chorban, and we mourn all the, you know, all the troubles and trials we go through is because we don't have the base of Mikdash, and divorce is one of them. I want to first, you know, give you the opportunity to sort of introduce yourself, and just by way of what the conversation we're going to have about mediating divorces and how we can prevent divorces and how we can divorces can perhaps be amicable. So let's just start out with your name, where you're from, and how you got to do what you're doing.
Excellent. First and foremost, I thank you guys. It's an honor to be here today. This is a dream for me in a sense. I've seen so many episodes of you guys, and you're doing amazing work.
Thank you.
And you should continue. I just wanted to give a shout out and a thank you to Shimmy J.
Yes.
Shimmy, gewalt.
Shimmy has been the push behind me getting onto this podcast.
Yeah, Shimmy was and a very big advocate.
I did not know that. Shimmy, how are you, dude?
So I keep quiet about
what
I do.
Shimmy, by the way.
Yeah, okay.
Back to the Yeshivish days.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So
how are you?
I picked up Shimmy, after a lot of his, what he's been through in life and whatnot. And he's been a good, good friend of mine. I've, kept up. We have a little difference in age, but he calls me a mentor, and I thank him for that.
He's older or you're older?
No, I'm way older. But he's young enough
point,
to be my son.
At this point, stage, not age.
Yes, you got it. So I thank him for putting us together and giving us the opportunity. And I just want to give one important disclaimer before we start. We're going to be talking about some very difficult topics and whatnot. And I know myself, as I'll talk about, we had a divorce in the family, which got me into this arena. I used to listen to podcasts every now and then, or just people speak. And I know that sometimes things that are said could potentially hurt somebody. So I'm going to, at the outset, say that we're talking in general terms. We're not talking about any specific cases. Even if I will bring up a case, I'm going to try to change some of the facts of the case. But more importantly, the last thing I want to do on this podcast is Khalilah hurt somebody. So I understand the sensitivities of people going through these challenges. And again, my heart's with every one of those people. But at the same time, we are talking about general terms. So let's
just very put kind that of you. Up.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a very important point to make because, as you mentioned, there are people that go through this. And a lot of times you get involved in their life and you get visibility into some of the challenges, into some of the pain and the dynamics and the aftermath. And our pure intention is to shed light where there can be light shed to help this issue progress and develop and evolve, hopefully in a way where that pain can be mitigated.
Correct. Just to jump on what Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson said when you spoke to him, he said he has empathy for these type of people. And that struck a chord with me because that's really how I work when I meet with people, to try to understand how they are, get into their mind, understand their perspective, and to give them that respect and the ability to help them get through the challenge. So I appreciate the opportunity. Just to give my quick background, my name is Ellie Goldbaum. As you've mentioned, my background is in healthcare. Started way before Shimmy J and all the other people in there. I started in the 80s. I don't want to give away my age, but yeah, Baruch Hashem, I do a lot of work within the healthcare arena, consulting and otherwise. About 12 years ago, to talk about specifically what we're discussing here, my daughter did go through a divorce, and I didn't know the first thing about divorce. Interestingly enough, I think that most of our friends and other people at that point, we were probably from the first ones in our circles. It wasn't so, there were plenty of divorce out there, but it wasn't so widespread. So in a sense, we had to deal with certain things, even our friends. How did they deal with us? It's a new arena and a new chapter in our lives. Unfortunately, over the last 12 years, things have evolved that it became much more commonplace. Which is actually one of the reasons I think there are more divorces, is because the stigma, in a sense, has been taken away.
Is that a good thing?
I don't think it's a good thing if that's the reason you got divorced, but there's no question about it. We'll talk about some other concepts and reasons of divorce. And I do think that there are divorces that could be prevented. And unfortunately, a lot of divorces that have to happen. The question is how you do that. My line is shalom bias or shalom divorce, but let's just do it peacefully. Mm-hmm. So that's, just simply how I got into this arena. And since 12 years ago, a lot of things have happened that I've gotten involved with.
So I guess, again, the question where we kind of left off with Rabbi Vigler that we want to start off by talking about is divorce is such a terrible thing, and it does a terrible thing to families. It really, obviously, how they take it, kids could become amazing, from it as well, like anything. But how can
it's important
we,
to reiterate that point. Yeah, I think that
people,
Rabbi Vigler
kids
made,
can become extraordinary.
Yeah. He said normal might not be realistic anymore, but the outcome is either going to be sub or super.
Yeah.
And I thought he did a wonderful job of sharing how time and time again, he's witnessed and in some cases helped facilitate that outcome of super.
Yeah.
And I think it's central to what we're talking about. I think specifically, and I know you brought this Nakuda up with Rabbi Wigler also about parental alienation and how parents, how couples go about getting to that outcome of divorce that sometimes has such collateral damage on the children. And if the divorce must occur, it must occur. And that's an outcome that we all accept and plan for. But to do it in a manner that avoids that collateral damage on the children, that is an area where we could really target and create awareness and drive social change.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up. That is a loaded, loaded topic. And I have a lot to say on it. And I'm going to ask you to refocus me as we speak, because yeah. I'm going to be all over the map. There's no question about it. What you speak about is essential. And that's one of the reasons I go out and do shows like this or speak to the public with that understanding that we have to change what has been going on. Most of the cases that I've gotten involved with initially were what I called fires. And by the time they came to me, the couple was killing each other for X amount of years, whether they went to court, Besdin, whatever the story was, community involvement, all of these topics I'd love to talk about, because I think that enhances the problem and that creates the forest fire. But I will tell you that once the forest fire is created, it's very difficult. Just think for a second. If I have a small fire, I take a fire extinguisher and I put it out. If it's a forest fire, how do you put out a forest fire? You have to first get to a controlled substance in order to go ahead and actually put it out. And the same thing I find is within the divorce. And when you bring up the children and the collateral damage, it's something I speak about all the time. The collateral damage is not only the children. There are parents, there are siblings, there are other people in the family. I have myself had some collateral damage in my daughter's divorce. Without a question, it's something I'm very passionate about speaking about. There's no question if things are done properly, you can have an amicable divorce. It's essential, in my opinion, to get somebody involved that is trusted on the two sides, which leads in a sense to what I worked on, which we'll talk about maybe later, which is the prenuptial agreement that I worked on with the Gedolim, which the concept of that is to minimize the fighting beforehand, getting to a amicable place that both parties could sit down without all the external people that are involved. I will tell you that's something that I hear about all the time, and I'm passionate about speaking about this as well. People will come to me and say, I don't understand this, whether it be a Rav, whether it be a people in the community, whether it be somebody who's just a Askin or whatever the case may be. They never spoke to me. And yet, I feel that they're going out against me and they're making all kinds of problems for me. Throw out a story that happened. I'm very close with a Rav in Lakewood, Yosef Greenfield, who does a tremendous amount of Shalom Bayis and divorce in Lakewood. And we talk about all kinds of things. We work together on a lot of cases. And this goes back quite a number of years. I get a call from somebody, came to my office, starts crying. I said, what's the story? He tells me about a divorce of his child. I happen to have known the family. And they started telling me that this Rav is involved and they never spoke to the Rav. So I said, okay, let me call Rabbi Greenfield. And I call, he knows the players in Lakewood. I call him up. He says, I know the Rav. I know everyone's involved. I said, how do you know all the people involved? He said, very simple, because the Rav doesn't know the first thing about divorce. So he calls me. I said, Rabbi Greenfield, they never spoke to the girl. He says, can't be. I said, I'm telling you, he never spoke to the girl. He calls me up. He said, I did my research and you're right. They never spoke to the girl. And that was a major problem. Because I had a comfort with Rabbi Greenfield and the Rav had a comfort with Rabbi Greenfield, we sent the couple to Rabbi Greenfield. And I'll never forget the words this family, the girl with the parents, called me right after they left. And they said, Ellie, this was pekuach nefesh. Those are the words they used. And really what happens is so many of these cases, the involvement, I actually had another podcast I was telling Nachi before, this concept of community. I think we're great as a community, and I really appreciate that I'm part of Klal Yisrael. But there is one small piece that I think as a community we have to look at. we get involved. People love, maybe we should talk about that now or later, this concept, social media. Everyone gets everything out in 1 second. Everyone knows what's going on. When I work on a divorce, I work very hard to keep it, to contain the hack on the street. People love to talk about this new case that hit the street and everyone's, you know, you get it out and before you know it, everyone's talking about it. To me, I feel that really enhances the fighting. And if we can, as a community, realize this is not our issue. And again, there are some cases and, you know, there are every now and then that specific Aguna case that, you know, that people go to the street. I'm not saying you should, you shouldn't. That's a different topic in general. You know, it has to be done with seichel and it's not so simple. But putting that aside, 99% of the cases, at least initially, do not belong in everyone's mouth. And as a community, we're phenomenal. But when it gets out to the street, I hear this constantly from people. Why do I get the feeling that some people are giving me that cold shoulder? Mm-hmm. It's just a feeling you get. I say it's called heart's rate. You feel it in your heart. Mm-hmm. You just, you know, when someone gives you a cold shoulder or gives you an attitude, you feel it. And that's something that I think that we have to contain in the community.
To amplify that point, you know, we start learning about the concept of Lashon Hara and gossiping from a very young age. And our concept of Lashon Hara, it starts off with like, oh, his crossover is not so good. And
what's a crossover?
Like silly things like playing basketball and very insignificant things.
Right.
As we get older and we start living adult lives and start encountering real life consequences and dynamics and life circumstances, we forget that the same concept of gossip and slander and sharing information that can sometimes be entirely baseless and we have no like evidence or nothing founded in reality, and we're just so simply comfortable sharing that and forwarding it and not realizing, and mikam chisro, we don't realize, chas v'shalom, if people knew the destruction that they're causing, they wouldn't think in a million years to do that.
Correct.
But like you said, the mindfulness that it requires to realize that when you are talking about the next case on the street, you're creating that destruction, mamish, for this family.
I'll add, we say Lashon Hara. Most of the times it's Rechilas and Maizy Shemra.
Yeah.
Lashon Hara is usually true. Rechilas Maizy Shemra is generally not
slander,
true.
Right.
And I can't begin to tell how many times people call me up. You know, I could be mediating whatever kind of issue, it's not necessarily divorce. People find out I'm the mediator, they'll call me up and they'll, you know, give me their opinion. And I'm saying, like, what are you getting involved with this? This belongs really between the two of them. It's not your business. And like, let them, of course, I don't say that because otherwise I'll lose the people. But I also.
And sometimes people want to know, like, what can we do to help? Sometimes, mamish, the best thing you can do is do nothing involved in it. And like Nachi said, just if you know them and you care about them, then daven for them.
I want to bring you to, I guess, you know, why are divorces so prevalent nowadays? Why are we seeing an uptick in the frum community? Obviously, the world at large, it's really, really crazy. But in the frum world where people are getting married at young ages, why are we seeing such an uptick in divorces?
Great question. So I actually have a list and it's growing. It's about 17. I have 17 reasons. Some of them a little
factors
overlap. But I'd like to think that I'd probably break it out to younger couples and older couples. Again, this is not specific to anybody, but just in general what I've seen. I can't begin to tell you how many older couples I'm dealing with right now. 20, 25 year marriages, 4 or 5 children. And in those instances, quite a bit, either they had no marriage from day one, which is another thing I got into, is we actually have a great curriculum for marriage, which we could talk about if we have time. But the concept is to make great marriages, good marriages great. But really, a lot of people don't understand the fundamentals of what is a marriage. It, you know, we're also a very high-paced community. I need to make money. We have a drive. I can't begin to tell you, I, you know, how many people are flying throughout this country every week to go to their real estate place, whatever they bought real estate, who knows where they bought their nursing homes or whatever they're doing to make a living. And they're not there. They're not part of a marriage. It's great. Your brother, you know, we have a great expense to build up, to bring up our families. We have, you know, tuitions, we have mortgages, we have summer homes. Everyone's got we have really very high expenses as a firm community. But because of that, there are some people just no shaykhs to a marriage.
For the young couple or someone who's newly married or dating right now to get married. Yeah.
So first thing, I don't want to scare off anybody. Marriage is great. And and even if we're at 10% divorce rate, I don't think it's that high. I think it's probably 6-8%, depending on which community. But whatever it is, it's high. But I don't want to scare people off. Marriage is a great thing, and healthy marriage is wonderful. And bringing up a family is what we're supposed to be doing. However, what we've seen is an uptick of people that are not committed to marriage. They get married. Let's put a simple thing. When I was a kid, if I wanted to, you know, we had, first of all, two Chol HaMoed a year. Today we have, I don't know, midwinter vacation, yeah. Hanukkah vacation.
Between camp and school.
You got it.
So, we're speaking to the Anshei Knesset Gedolah to make a fifth Chol HaMoed.
Right. So we have all these extra Chol HaMoeds. And Rabbi Rotberg spoke about it on his podcast.
Masterfully.
He did. And he's a great person. But he was saying that some of these people are growing up in the lap of luxury, running throughout the world and whatnot. These kids never got the word no said to them. They're used to getting everything, and they're living a very high life. And then all of a sudden, marriage comes to reality, you know, and now all of a sudden you don't necessarily have the same access to money. You're part of a marriage. Not everything goes exactly your way, and certainly life has its challenges as people have children or whatnot. So when you're dealing with those challenges, if people don't know how to deal with the challenges, they just say, you know what, I'm out. So there's a certain element of that. There's a certain element of there's a lot of, you know, the internet and in general has opened up people to have access to not the best material, to say the least. There's no question about it. And I've asked people that are in chinuch that understand these things. The average, you know, regular guy who's not such a learner has seen things that he shouldn't be seeing. And I'm not saying the girls have their issues as well. I'm not here to talk about specifically anti-men, but, you know, we talk in a general way. So when people have access to things, another thing I think that's important to talk about is the concept of, you know, I didn't grow up with an internet. I didn't grow up with cell phones we had. I had something called a beeper. I was a chashra guy and a beeper in those days. So you're talking about people, who are the people that are giving chinuch to our generation? It's the influencers. It's the Instagrams. I watch people, you know, I see it in the divorces where people come with ideas that are not Torah-dic ideas, and they're looking for something different beyond the lifestyles that are okay to speak about in the non-Jewish world have influenced some of our people. I've had some cases like that where not a Torah-dic lifestyle of people living like that. And some of these people, there's a teacher that was a teacher in one of my daughter's schools, and she was used to do plays or whatnot, who went to an alternate lifestyle after teaching in yeshiva. And she was very, very funny. She used to make plays and whatnot. And all the girls loved to watch her because she was funny. But she was, without a question, constantly giving messages that were not appropriate for yeshiva people. And when people watch these things and they're influenced by it, yeah, it has an effect.
So it's media intake at a young age, it can affect down the road. You see that when you're sort of dealing with couples, right, that it could have an effect.
The young couples, I think more than the older couples, although the older couples also, you know, if we all had our disagreements with our spouses when we get married, that's part of Shana Rishana. I think it's wonderful. You learn to respect one another. It's actually part of a lot of what we talk about in the curriculum. But in my day, if you had a disagreement, you had to sit and work it out. Today, all you do is take your phone out and just go through Instagram and have a nice day. You know, forget about this. We'll deal with it some other time. So,
Or not.
Yeah.
We'll be right back to this episode in just a second. Of course, Tisha B'Av is just right around the corner, just a couple of days. Maybe you're listening to this on Tisha B'Av and your children are leaning over your corner. And, you know, I don't know if you want them to listen to an episode about divorce. They don't really need to hear that right now. But you know what they could be watching? the amazing content that is on Tevito.com. That is Tevito.com. Tevito.com is the number one place for your children to be watching good Yiddish content. It's clean, it's kosher, it's educational. So head to Tevito.com today. Use promo code MM10 for 10% off. That is MM10 for 10% off at Tevito.com. Today's a day where your children are home and you want them to be spending it in a way similar to you are, which is trying to feel something, trying to, you know, watch something that will give you the feeling of Tisha B'Av in a way of maybe you can change. And that is something that your child will get watching on Tevito.com. They have an amazing array of videos specifically for Tisha B'Av in this time of year. So head to Tevito.com right now and use promo code MM10. And no matter when you're listening to this, something that you need to know, of course, is that our friends at Town Appliance are there for you ever since 1979. So make sure you head to townappliance.com. That is townappliance.com. Or you can hit the link in the show notes or in the episode description and message them on WhatsApp. An appliance story that you can message on WhatsApp. What? Yes, that is the truth. Go ahead. Town Appliance is there for you. No matter if it's a new construction, a massive job, commercial, residential, no matter what it is, Town Appliance can take care of it for you. So make sure you head to townappliance.com today and let them know you heard about them from your friends at Meaningful People.
I do want to unpack the curriculum for marriage because I think it transcends all of the inflection points of where a marriage breaks down. And either it never gets off the ground, like with the young couple demographic that you're talking about, or somehow the couple managed to stay together for sometimes decades and build a family and distract themselves enough with what's going on in their life until finally there's nothing left. And then they realize there's nothing here. So I think the curriculum for marriage, as you put it, is a critical, it's a crucial step in creating and preserving and building marriages.
It's the antidote, yeah.
Yeah. And I want to really, really amplify, because we're going at it from a vantage point of, we're starting the discussion with divorce and how to do it correctly, how to avoid collateral damage. Like, that's sort of the overarching topic. But really at the core of what we're talking about is the beauty of marriage.
Correct.
And the opportunity that is a marriage, a harmonious marriage between two people who are not the same and who are not going to agree on everything, but are willing to put in the time and the effort and the blood and the sweat and the tears to end up with the most beautiful thing on earth, which is a relationship with a person with whom you cannot have a relationship anywhere else.
I'm glad you amplified on my thought.
I mean, that's the avoider.
And that's really, I think, the message, one of the messages, there's no question about it. Marriage is great, and I started with that before. Sometimes when you work for something, you actually appreciate it more than anything. So mm-hmm. when you work on a marriage, I'm married, Baruch Hashem, quite a number of years. I'm still working on my marriage. So there's no question about it. With each year that you work together, you work toward a goal, and you have appreciation for one another, and you don't let the small things get in the way of the bigger things. As someone said, you know, when there's issues, the Sutton comes out in a big way. But if you're able to work through the marriage, and it'll just take a simple thing I speak about, you're young enough, maybe you know, the five love languages. Okay, so
sure.
Just to use a simple thing, we actually have it. I think we didn't call it the love languages because it's a Torah book. So I think we had some other term for it, but it's
irrelevant. Which word is the bad word, love or language?
We'll leave it to each one differently, but a simple concept like that. So you know, the reality is if people, you know, gave it some thought, there are five love languages, and typically a person has an itiyah toward one of those languages. So just to go through them, if I remember them, if you you'll help me, you know, so you have acts of service, you have words of affirmation, you have touch, you have what's the other ones? I'm doing this on purpose to try to get you.
Wait, what's the fifth?
There's
quality time.
Quality time and gifts. Okay. So those are the five love languages. And just a simple thing. So if I don't know my love language, I somehow or another, we get married. We think me and my spouse, me and my column, me and my husband, we are so tight. We know everything, right? We dated all of 10 times, 9 times, and we know each other great. I think that everyone could feel that way.
Total of 26 hours.
Right, exactly. And we're good to go, and we're never going to have any disagreements. And not only that, my chas and my kala, they know exactly what I need and when I need it and how to think. They think exactly like me. And then, of course, and by the way,
and I knew already on the second date,
right,
by the way.
Of course. So, and these are good things because it is exciting, you know, when someone goes through it, certainly young, anyone, any age, they get engaged. It's really beautiful. And it should be like that. And we should keep it
simple.
As excitement and that's great. But when you get married, so our curriculum is specific to after marriage. It's something that we feel very strongly. It takes somebody, a couple of months of seeing that, I could use help. We're not talking about couples that need professional help. We're talking more a good couple who we could take a simple concept and help them make their marriage great. So if you take the languages, and I actually just worked with a couple by focusing, this is a 20-year couple. They're married 20 years, they had Shalom Bayis issues, and I focused on the love languages. And I realized that her love language is words of affirmation. Not only was the husband not giving her words of affirmation, he was knocking her. Mm. So in a sense, what he was doing is taking her love language and killing her.
Wow.
So by going ahead and opening his eyes to understand that all you have to do with your wife is find the proper things to speak about, give her those words of affirmation, you'll build her up, and it's going to help you in your marriage.
Why they wait 20 years?
So that's what I'm saying. A lot of these people have had, this is what we spoke about before. They're married for 20 years, they never had a marriage. And it's sad, but you know what? Why break it now? Let's work on it now and make it into a good marriage. They have a number of children. I said to them, you want to get divorced? I get you divorced, right? 1, 2, 3. What do you think? It's going to get better when you get divorced. It's not going to get better. Your children are going to suffer, whatnot. But if you want to go divorce, let's go ahead. And of course, that's, by the way I talk a lot of people out of divorce. I sit down with them and I go down the terms of a divorce. And they say, but how am I going to live? And how am I going to do that? And I say, well, that's why divorce is not the greatest option. Again, there are times you don't have the choice. But a lot of the people that dose of reality, and come sit down, let's talk about
sort of like you're putting the fire on them, right? And if it is a situation where someone indeed needs to be divorced, then they will feel that is the right path
that I have to do that. I know, but just going back to the love language, so let's just say that your wife's love language is gifts, and to you gifts are meaningless and you need words of affirmation. So if your wife, you get married, and she would go ahead and say, in her mind, what a gift means, I'm showing a great act of love. So I'm going to go ahead and put together whatever it is, $250 a week from my paycheck, and I'm going to hold on to it for a month. And after 5 months, I have, $1,200. I'm going to go and buy him a watch.
Quick math.
$1,250. Yeah. And so
healthcare guys.
Healthcare guys, yeah. So if I learned anything in Yeshiva, it was math. So, okay. But, so now she comes out and she gives her husband, or it could be the other way, you buy her a gift, and you give her a gift, and her language is not gifts. Her language is words of affirmation. So she'll open the gift, or he'll open the gift, and just like, oh, that's so sweet, that's so special. What you really did is you killed him. Now, all she had to do is know that his love language is words of affirmation. And you could enhance marriages. I'm telling you, I've done this with people who are married 30, 40 years. I said to them, think about it. Learn your love language, learn your spouse's love language, and you will see that is something that will enhance your marriage.
Is this something that when people are dating, they could learn about themselves, or do they have to be married? Like, is a love language exclusive to once someone gets married?
No,
or?
Absolutely not. It could be a single as well. Absolutely. And it could be friendship also. I mean, love doesn't mean that you're married. Love means that you appreciate one another. But I think another term that we use to talk about the education is vulnerability. There are certain things that you guys are wonderful and nice, I'm not going to share with you. It's a personal thing.
Like your age.
I'm like my age, there you go. Today happens to be my Hebrew birthday, so.
We're gonna need a bracha.
We'll need a bracha, we'll give you a bracha. So I don't wanna give you the age, but we'll give you the bracha after. But so Baruch Hashem, there are certain things that I won't share. Like a simple thing, let's just say a guy's a bedwetter. She's a bedwetter, right? I'm not gonna tell that to everybody. When you get married and you could share certain personal things about yourself, that makes you vulnerable. Vulnerability builds a relationship. So these are things that, just simple examples of what we utilize in the book. Obviously, there's a lot more to the book. It's not really the curriculum is an actual handbook with homework, in a sense, to help you enhance what you've learned. to put it into
exercises.
Writing.
Exercises.
Exactly. And it gets people to think. It's also something that when you go through those exercises and put certain things down, we encourage the couples to feel comfortable to share. It doesn't mean that you're going to be comfortable to share everything you wrote down at the beginning of your marriage, which teaches us that if you give people the time to get comfortable, they will share more. Mm-hmm. The more you share of these type of personal feelings or whatnot, the more you will have that great for marriage.
Sure. Something I heard, two points that you just reminded me of. One, with the expression of love language, it's very interesting to see that people will typically attempt to give the love language that is their own.
And absolutely.
They,
now, that's in the book, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
I actually read the book. My wife made me read it, and I loved it. But it gives, absolutely, that's in, your natius is to think the way you think.
You so assume, that, erroneously, you good. Assume that what the other person wants is your love language. So if gifts are your love language and you get activated by receiving gifts, your default is just going to try to give everyone gifts. When meanwhile, all your wife wants is some quality time.
Exactly.
And that's it. And if the other way, if let's say your inyan is quality time and like really that's all you want and you're like waiting for that time and you could get the greatest gift in the world, but if it doesn't come along with that quality time,
put the phone away.
Yeah. And the value of that gift is really stripped of any value.
Absolutely.
How much, I'm just curious, like in terms of the marriages that you find yourself being involved in, the phone, the technology, the distractions, how much does that play a role? Have you seen such clear, just like miscommunications between husband and wife because of the distractions that it led to the point of you guys are in a bad place?
So I'm not a therapist.
Right.
You know, I unfortunately know too much and I understand a lot, but when it comes to something to that level, I work pretty much with Relief. I think I'm a spree dial with them. So, you know, whenever there's an issue like that, I do get people the proper therapy. You know, I don't try to be a therapist if I'm not, but sometimes there's this patchwork. Very often a therapist is not available all the time. And I find if you're able to just be there for somebody in their time of need, that I'm a little more accessible than a therapist. And I'm able to put the little flame out, the little fire out before it really gets to a worse place. That's my sort of role in these type of things. So I couldn't, you know, I wouldn't even attempt to answer that question. But to me personally, I can't imagine it's not a pretty decent piece. The only thing is that the young couples, the wife and the husband, are both on their phones. So, you know, like there are a lot of couples that tell me, we have a rule. We come home, whether it's supper time or other times, the phone goes down and goes out. You know, we don't take it out during supper time. And that's a tremendously a valuable tool and something that I would encourage everyone to do. And if you're able to limit your phone use for X amount of hours, it certainly would, you know, enhance people because it gives people time to talk.
Every minute, literally. Yeah. The ROI on every minute of time of just being present without anything pulling you out of the room, whether it's a phone, whether it's anything.
I said the problem is we're all guilty. I'm guilty. You know, sure. We're all guilty of it. We have phones. This became the way of the world. And we have to really focus when we're spending time with our spouses to say, I'm not available.
We'll be right back to this episode in just a second. Quick, a word from our friends at LifeShare. Yes, LifeShare. Like I say, it doesn't matter whether you have life insurance or not. LifeShare is there for you. You should have life insurance. It is important for you to have life insurance. Every single person who's married, certainly if you have a child or kids, you should have life insurance. But LifeShare is one of those things that you should have as well. It's an amazing new initiative where you're paying a $40 annual fee to be part of a community. You're part of this community of 8,000 to 10,000 people. And anytime there's a death in that community of 8,000 to 10,000 people, you're paying a one-time fee of $32, which could be meiser, by the way. And that family that Chas V'Shalom lost somebody, if they are a LifeShare member, they're getting an instant $250,000 payment within 72 hours. And you as well will be part of that. LifeShare is about being part of a community that is there for each other. Gone can be the days of these emergency campaigns where we have to scrap together funds and rely on so many different communities. I mean, don't get me wrong, Mincha Chayisrael is an amazing thing, but LifeShare is there before tragedy. Let's make sure we are covered as a community. We're there for each other. You can be covered and you can cover your friend. Make sure you head to lifeshare.community. That is lifeshare.community. I myself have an account. I have life insurance as well. Both are extremely important. make sure you hit the lifeshare.community and get enrolled today. No blood tests needed, no physicals needed. Hit the lifeshare.community, or in fact, something easier, head to the bio of this episode, the description of this episode, and hit the link right there, and you'll be directed to the place that you need to go.
Something I heard that I think is very helpful, and it goes to the vulnerability piece that you were mentioning before. Having interactions with a spouse that require focus, that don't lend itself to being distracted by the phone, helps. Because if the entire goal is to just, I want to have an hour without my phone. Okay, so what are you going to fill that hour with, right? So when you come up with things that require engagement, in-person attention, whether it's checking in, I heard once a very cool exercise, have a conversation with your spouse about how your day was, right? Very simple framework for the check-in. How was your day physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually? So here we have four planes on which we're sharing with each other. We're being vulnerable. We're letting you know, my day, I'm very tired. I'm very emotionally sad about this thing that I heard about. Spiritually, I'm feeling connected. I heard a really good sheer. Spiritually, I'm feeling disconnected. I'm feeling like I need a little bit of inspiration. I need a little bit of chizik. And all of a sudden, and now your phone's away because you're actually talking to your spouse and you're engaging in an activity, in an exercise that is A, bringing you closer to your spouse, and it requires your all-in attention to be vulnerable and to connect.
Correct.
With hopefully the favorite person in your world.
So you're really touching a lot of different points. You know, the thought of spending time, how many times you go out to a restaurant and you see a couple of letters, you went out to a restaurant and you're both on your phones. Like, I wonder, like, are you guys talking to one another on the phone? It's like, come on, put your phones away. Now, I'm not going to say, obviously, there are times you have children, whatever it is that you may have left behind, and that's why you have to check
bring back
phone.
The beeper.
But, well,
bring back the
beeper. I had a beeper that only had a number. And then I moved up to a Hushra beeper to be able to actually put a message in. That was like a second. That was like, wow, Hushra's beeper, you know.
What message would you have for newlyweds, guys who maybe are engaged right now? Being that you've been at that point where a lot of marriages, you've been by marriages that had their demise, but also ones that evaded divorce and, you know, were able to thrive after. What's a message or a lesson you would give that person listening today who's on the younger end getting into a marriage that you could say, you stick with this, you think about this, you do this, and it'll be helpful?
So I think that this is, we spoke about before, you spoke about Tisha B'Av and the concept of running this on Tisha B'Av. My organization, Yeshar Initiative, which has a prenuptial agreement, which Mel will talk about a drop as well, we did some Tisha B'Av events, and the concept was Tisha B'Av was the day to talk about Shalom Bayis and whatnot, and we did focus on that. Rabbi Bender, who spoke on, he was one of our speakers, very focused on midas, and midas, and it's something that I think is incredibly important. One of the other speakers, I think it was actually Rabbi Greenfield, spoke about this concept of you as parents, you are role models for your children. If you want your children to have Shalom Bayis, you have to have Shalom Bayis. So I think that if people, when they got married, I actually said this at Sheva Brachas more than once, young couple gets married and you see the grandparents are sitting there. You know, we think that, you know, grandparents just became grandparents and that's who they are. They were that young couple at that dais not too many years ago. And I just said this to Sheva Brachas by a friend of ours, and I said, if people would concentrate on that thought, you're a young couple, what is my purpose of getting married? What am I in the game for? And if my focus is, and if I had those parents and grandparents that are people that I could look up to and aspire to be, to realize that that is really my focus. My focus is, I want to be at the point when my grandparents are now, whatever, 50, 60 years married, and look at what they built up. They built up a huge family, Kanara, of great children, and everything is wonderful. That's what I aspire to be. It's a matter of putting the proper focus of where you're going. True marriage is fun, and marriage can be great, and has its ups and its downs, and that's wonderful. But where's your focus? Focus on tachlis. This is our goal, to build the next generation of Klal Yisrael. I had healthy parents, hopefully, that I could learn from. And maybe if I didn't, and you mentioned this before about the divorces and how we could make great kids coming out of divorces, it's if the divorce was a healthy divorce And that's one of the things we beg people to do. Do it healthy for the sake of the children. Very often they say, I'm doing this for my children. You're not doing this for your children if you're destroying your children on the way to get your divorce. Or maybe we could talk about that concept of forensics and other things. And there is a time for forensics. But very often it's the people that will use alienation, whether they do it intentionally and not intentionally, I can't tell you. But people that get involved with the fighting and whatnot, they are destroying their children. They're not focused on this concept of I'd like to be there in 60 years. That's my focus. How I get there and all the bumps in the road, that's great. But that would be my message to a young couple. Focus on what's important in life.
Talk to me a little bit about the prenup. I saw that you have haskamas from Moshe Sternbach, from Rabbi Hillel David. What is this? People hear the word prenup, their ears perk up, and they're like, yeah.
What is it? So let me give you a little background. I appreciate that you asked about that. It's something that I will not lie to you. When I started this, I thought I was crazy. And I never expected to get haskama, and it was a pipe dream of mine. And I just felt very strongly that what I went through, I wanted to make it better for other people. And again, this is not something, my personal thing was whatever we went through, it's not a personal, it's really trying to make a system better. The concept of a prenup and what we went to, I think the challenge that I had is the RCA, Bezdin of America, has a prenuptial agreement that is being used in the modern Orthodox community. So,
and for anyone that's not familiar, the nature of a prenuptial agreement is we agree in advance to the terms that will settle a divorce proceeding.
And there's a reason why, a lot of the yeshiva world doesn't really ascribe to it is because...
That's exactly what so this is where we're going with that. And I think these are the challenges that we had. So the RCA prenup, for the most part, the anyone out there in the street, they know about if I don't give a get, $150 a day knas. So a lot of people look at it and say, well, this is all against the man, which to some extent it is. Then there was a halachic issue, which talks about, could you put this $150 a day knas? I understand the halachic is way beyond the scope of what we're talking here today, but leave it precise. Let's put it this way. Most people don't understand the halachic ramifications, and they say, RCA, no good, and that's the end of the story. So therefore, our prenuptial agreement gets absorbed into that same agreement. Our agreement is night and day from the RCA agreement, and it is, the focus is totally different. The concept that we started with was, I want something that's okay with every gadol out there, that no one could say that this agreement is a problem halachically.
Uncontroversial.
Uncontroversial.
So what is the agreement?
So the agreement really is I have a copy of it here, but it's available on our website and it can be downloaded for free. This is not a money-making operation. The website, just to throw it out, is yasharcoalition.org, Y-A-S-H-A-R, Yashar. I'm going to give a shout out to Martin Friedlander, who's a divorce attorney, who has drafted the initial document. And I had met him when I got involved with my daughter's divorce. And I was talking to him, he says, I'm actually wanted to do something like this. So he wrote the drafts and I sort of, worked alongside with him initially. And then I sort of took it on as my baby. But he's certainly helpful in the drafting. So when we started this, the concept was to come up with something that's acceptable across the board halachically. I learned certain things that are mind blowing when you look at every single line of the agreement. The agreement was initially brought to Shlomo Miller in Toronto. He was told to us as being the Pesach Hadar of America, even though he's in
North America.
In North America, he does have a kol in Lakewood, so I guess that brings us back here. We worked with Shlomo Miller probably for about 3 years. He spent a lot of time on this. This wasn't something that just, he took it very seriously. It was incredible for me to understand certain things halachically of why this potentially could be a problem, why we changed certain things in the agreement.
You're teasing me right now.
I'll throw out one thing.
Give me some terms.
I'll give you some terms. Okay, good. One of the things that we wrote in the agreement was that if there's a separation at some point, that the husband or whoever the moneyed spouse, could be the wife, continues to maintain the household and continues to, at least for the time being, you know, until we figure out where life goes. So in the initial stage, we continued to maintain, we wrote the wife and the children. And Shlomo said, Mehecha Tesa, the wife is entitled to Mezainus. In other words, if she did things that were improper, she may not be entitled to Mezainus. So therefore, he took out the word spouse. So the agreement states that they'll continue to maintain the children. So, you know, that's just one thing if you wanted something to be, I teased you, okay? But there were quite a number of things within the agreement that we, even halachically, of what Bezdin, what potentially could allow Bezdin to charge, and who pays it, how it has to work. Again, it's a lot of detail. But after 3 years, he finally goes through it, and I finally get his, okay, I'm ready to give my approval on this agreement. And he says to me, I need other gedolim that I feel are gedolim to, this is not to disparage any other gedolim, but this was what he basically said to me, that I could—
additional, you know, plates.
I think he was not stupid in the sense that he realized he was coming out with a potentially very big controversial issue, and he didn't want to be the only one. I said, okay, so who should I go to? He says, Rav Hillel David and Rav Feivel Cohen. I said, Rav Miller, David doesn't sign on anything. Feivel Cohen doesn't sign on anything. And I happen to know the gedolim. I'll go speak to them, but it's going to be challenging. And as if I put 3 years of work into it. And he wasn't going to give me his haskama until after I spoke to them. So I go to Rav Hillel David, who became like, I mean, he just was my right-hand man. Maybe I was his right-hand man in the sense that he really got involved with it. We had other gedolim that got involved with it. And after they went back and forth and changed a few other small things, I got the askamas from Shlomo Miller and Phil David. This is before they joined the Meretzes. Since then, they joined the Meretzes. But at that time, they really weren't out there putting Shlomo Miller maybe a little more, but David certainly didn't get askama from him. And not only that, he really, the askama, if you read the askama, he understands what the importance of it is. And more importantly, he believes, and I certainly believe, and touches to what we talked about before, we will save marriages because there is an agreement. People think that this is, oh, easy way out, let's get divorced. On the contrary, the agreement states that the Bezdin has to be responsible. And I, as a mediator, feel the same way. I don't want to break marriages. If it has to be broken, of course, we'll break the marriage. But the first thing we speak about is, did the couple act responsibly, certainly if they're children, to see if there's a way to save the marriage? And if they can't, okay, so there's a way to deal with it.
We'll be right back to this episode. A quick word from my friends at ILS, Infinity Land Services. To infinity and beyond, that's what happens when you choose ILS. No more stories, no more novels, no more excuses. Doesn't matter if you're buying $100 million in real estate or you're buying your first home at $800,000. Where can you buy a home for $800,000? I'm not sure. I don't know, maybe Mars today? Anyways, make sure you are using the number one title company in the world, and that is Infinity Land Services. Mark Hershkowitz, the man, the myth, the legend, will have you covered. Rain or shine, hail or fire, Mark Hershkowitz is there. His team at ILS are there to make sure that your title is dealt with in the best possible way. All too often, title is that last stop. And you know what? You want to make sure that you're not messing around with that. It's taken care of and you're working with the best possible company. You tell your real estate agent, you tell your broker, yeah, okay, so I'm very happy that we're closing on this house, but I want to go with ILS. Say no more, they'll say. I'll give Mark a call today. Wow, that rhymed. What? ILS.com. It's ILS Title, actually. It's ILSTitle.com. ILSTitle.com for the best title company in the world. Yes, there is one more Tisha B'Av film I want to talk to you about. This Tisha B'Av, Build-A-Thon. It is Build-A-Thon, an amazing film that's happening this Tisha B'Av with Rabbi Shmuel Reichman. Okay, it is a perfect program for Tisha B'Av that you can join Rabbi Reichman from the studio and hear about amazing, amazing things. It's a really exciting program brought to you by Mikdash Minute. They're going to be on the front lines of Gaza with a report, some stuff from New York, some stuff from the Old City. This will include also a special, you know, kfitzel written by the Kaisel, put into the wall on video. So you want to make sure to be watching this. Another reason you should be watching this film is that any participant can win a free ticket to Israel by simply choosing a mitzvah. You choose a mitzvah that you're going to do, and you could enter a raffle to win a free ticket to Israel. They are trying to get 10,000 mitzvahs committed to on this day to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And that is going to be onemitzvah.org/buildathon. Head to onemitzvah.org/buildathon. It's an amazing program, and I hope you watch it.
such an important shift in optics, because prenuptial agreement has this like aura around it. And I think it's from the secular world that it's some kind of escape valve, like a hatch that I could just pull and then I'm out.
Absolutely.
But like you're saying, it's setting up the framework of the marriage that this is what's going to govern the acrimony, so that we don't have to have, so that there can be an amicable navigation of, is there a marriage here to save? Correct. And when there's no rule book and when there's no terms governing how do we go about determining if there's a marriage to salvage here, then it's the Wild West.
But it's beyond that. Even if, like I said before, what's my focus? Shalom bias or shalom divorce? If you have an agreement in place. So again, I tried to explain it before, but now it'll make more sense. What happens when a couple gets to a point that there's some kind of marital strife, whatever is going on, very often in our communities, we'll go to a rav, we'll go to a therapist, we'll go to someone in the community who gets involved in these situations. And not everyone is so skilled in dealing with these things. And very often it could be the particular person's rav or yeshiva or something like that. And it could be on the girl's side or the boy's side. And they feel very strongly that after hearing what this person said, and I could tell you that every case that comes to me, everyone is a narcissist and everyone has personality disorders. Maybe we all do, I don't know. But I still believe there's different levels of personality disorders. So, you know, you have to know how you deal with these things. As an example, I will not get involved in a case until both sides call me. I'll talk to you. I don't know if I'm giving you right information. What I heard one side of a story. If people would deal with that one piece, that you don't get involved until you listen to the two sides. So really what the prenuptial agreement did was it gave, you put into this agreement that we're going to go to this responsible Bezdin to deal with it. Now, if there is no need to go to the Bezdin, you can go to Eli Goldbaum, you can go to anyone else who does this type of work. We don't need to go to Bezdin. But if it gets to a point that I can't get the other side to the table for whatever reason, which is what happens today in a lot of the cases, you have a responsible place to go. And before everyone gets involved and makes the hack, like we spoke about before, that is a responsible place to go. The Bezdin will then work with the couple to see, did you, certainly if there's four or five children, did you do this responsibly? Did you determine that there's really no shalom bias? And if there isn't, let's work on shalom divorce.
What are some of those indicators that I think you would say, okay, this is a couple that needs to get married, or there is no shalom bias here, or this is beyond repair?
All right, so those are things that, you know, you asked before, why there's so much more, you know, why there's more divorce today. So there's no question about it. There's a lot of mental health issues. You spoke about it on some of your podcasts. And I think that without a question, it's something that has to be looked at seriously. There's a lot of depression out there. You know, we can talk about the reasons, but that I think that's the world, unfortunately. And potentially social media helps that as well. Anxiety and whatnot, that's not necessarily the reason to get divorced. But when they went to proper help, and that's what I mentioned before, I'm not the therapist. I'll potentially ask for HIPAA releases that I could speak to the therapist, but if they went to proper help and they feel, and the therapists feel, and I'll bring relief, I'll bring people who understand the language better than I do to determine that there's nothing really to work with in this particular case. Sometimes it's a no-brainer, right? We have alternate lifestyles, as I explained to you, that's not okay with Frumkeit. I've had cases like that where someone wakes up one day and says, you know what, this is no longer right. The way I want to go, which we actually address in the prenuptial agreement. We discuss we have an appendix in there to talk about what is Shabbos, Shmir Shabbos, what's kashrus.
Well, that's very thorough.
So all of these things were thought, and we really put a lot of thought into it to make sure that at least we're going to try to keep these kids the way when they got married, this was the way they wanted to bring up these children. You know, you go to court, you talk, have a Satmar couple as an example. You go to court and the girl comes in and says, well, I'll send my kid to yeshiva. And they start talking about a school that's co-ed. A Satmar couple, we understand it and realize, hey, that's not orthodoxy. To the judge who's not from or not Jewish,
Jewish school.
What's the problem? Right. So we identified, and certainly each community could specify what in their community is called, kashrus or whatnot, as it affects the community. Just to, you know, as you mentioned Rosh Tembach before, so just to, I just wanted to get back to that thought. So after I had the Haskamah from Shlomo Miller and Phil David, so they said, let's go to Lakewood. I went to Rav Forsheim, who was the Pesach in Lakewood in BMG, can't get through this. He's so difficult to get to. And the way you get him is he has, in the yeshiva, he has time slots, 10-minute time slots. And you can write your name down. So we're at Greenfield, who I mentioned
with
before.
A pen.
With a pen, of course.
Love that.
Yeah, so that's BMG, right? So Rabbi Greenfield writes two slots. He got 20 minutes. And we went and we brought it to him. And he took to it like a fish in water. He really got involved. He gave a couple of interesting, you know, changes. I had his escama. He called me one night. And literally right after he got involved with it, he said, okay, I'm ready to write your escama. You can pick it up tomorrow morning. I was like, wow. So to me, it was a chizik.
That's fire.
Because that means that they were really into it. So after I got that escama, I went to some of the other gedolim, and they said, well, you have to go to Eretz Yisrael. You got to go to Eretz Yisrael. So I asked Reb Hillel David, I said, okay, so who do we go to in Eretz Yisrael? He said, well, Moshe Sternbach is the one who's the strongest against the RCA prenup. And again, I'm not here to disparage the RCA. I actually work very well with Ray Willig. When I met him, you know, just, I think it's important. Ray Willig basically said to me, I don't care, use any agreement, just use something.
Just have an agreement.
And really, I told him, I'm not here to come against the RCA agreement. I don't need to know the halacha, I need to know nothing. All I know is that my community doesn't use an agreement. We should have something as well. And he agreed to it. Interestingly enough, a number of the Rosh Hashiva and YU use my agreement. To the extent Ray Willig asked me, and he sent me a letter that he sent out to the community that they recognize our agreement and are willing to adjudicate our agreement in the Bezin of America. So, you know, you could really pick any Bezin that you want. So, again, I'm not here to halachic piece. I'm not going to talk about the halacha. You could use it, you can't use it. That's not my point. My point is that when we wanted to go to the Rav, that, you know, Shtemrach, who's the Gadol and the Paisek Adar today, and he basically, he reads English. I actually have some beautiful pictures of him working on the agreement. I have a picture of him with the agreement on one side, about 6-7 Sfarim open on his desk, working on the agreement to make sure, you know, halachically he was okay with everything. And at the end, he gave us a beautiful haskama. He actually spoke on our video on Tisha B'Av. You know, whatever clip you can get from the Gadol at his age. You know, Sikar, he really has been, you know, fired behind it. And after I just went to some other Gadolim, I went to Bnech Isaac Goldbaum, who gave a beautiful haskama. And somehow or another, I got pulled into the Sephardi community. And they were actually having a meeting with all their Rabbanim about Bittul Kedushin, which we actually talk about in the agreement, which is something that has been done, and it's hard to understand because that's like basically saying the marriage never happened. And it's mind-blowing that there are rabbis that are willing to do something like that. So they were having a meeting, and they asked me to come down to speak to them. Just an aside, it was a funny story. So I'm sitting in the agreement. If you remember, the Sephardic community had a whole bunch of cases where they went after people that weren't getting gittin. There was one lady, she got her get after 17 years. So I'm sitting at the table, Rabbi Azari is next to me, and this guy, Harry Ashmi, who was behind this whole thing, he was sitting next to him. It's in Harry's house. And she walks in, I just picture, the door is right behind me. So she walks literally to my back. So I stand up just to let her talk to the rabbi. She came to thank the rabbis about the agreement. And everyone's taking videos. Here she came in, she got her get after 17 years. So I'm standing right next to her, and it went viral. And people are thanking me for getting her to get. I'm saying, I had nothing to do with that.
Right place, right time.
Right place at the right time, exactly. So,
but the Kedushin is like that a get is not necessary in that situation
because
there was never married.
Retroactively nullifies the marriage. Yeah.
And that's, as I said, this is the challenge that the Gedolim felt. If you look in our agreement, it actually talks about Shlomo Miller put into the agreement. I don't know that I would have, but that was something they insist on having in the agreement that you waive your right to any Bittul Kedushin. Because these are the them who are dealing with the problems. So I ended up, they told me, you need to go to Chacham Asher. He's Chuel, he's the Paisik of the Sephardi community. Get him on board, you're good to go. I come sit down with him. Again, I'm not talking negative about the RCA agreement, but for a half hour, the first half hour of my conversation with him was him giving me his whole story of why he has a problem with the RCA agreement. Then no agreement could be good. And, you know, I said, oh, Hashem, please help me. So sure enough, this was, mind you, at 9:30 at night. So finally at 10:15, I'm not exaggerating, 45 minutes, I didn't get a word in. 10:15, I start telling him about the agreement and the background and whatnot. I left this house at 11:15. I get a call from him at 2:00 the next afternoon. He says, Eli, I'm the shtoimim of your agreement.
Wow.
And he's a Sephardi, so that's not bad, right? He went to Meir Yeshiva. So I'm the shtoimim of your agreement. I read it 4 or 5 times last night. This is what he told me. I read it 4 or 5 times last night, which means after 11:15. I had to wake up this morning with a Frischkeit. And I never forget these words because it's like it resonates with me. And I read it again. It's amazing what you did. And he gave us a glory. I mean, really, what he wrote in his Haskama is beautiful, glorified Haskama. Wow. I had it by 2:15 the next day.
Wow.
So for me personally, it gives me, as far as the halachic piece of it, and again, all of these Haskamas are on the website. You can get, everything is downloaded. You can download all the Haskamas and certainly talk to the Gedolim. He actually invited me to his kollel a few times. He spoke about the different agreements. I got a little more perspective on the halacha side. But that's something also that I just would throw out there. It's difficult for me to go ahead and say to people, we should use this agreement across the board to everybody. Every young couple should sign an agreement. I think it will happen at some point because of what we're talking about. There's no question about it. There's more divorce. Why not put what I call an insurance policy? If you think about it, what is this? It's an insurance policy. You buy insurance for your life.
It's just an agreement that you'll be honest, upstanding, and take care of.
That's exactly
you have a list of the reason why people are, you think people are getting divorced nowadays. I'm curious if you can I'm curious.
Okay.
what you have.
I'll talk about some of the concepts, but I think we spoke about some of them. So the first thing we have is lack of communication. Don't know how to deal with conflict. I think you brought that up before. One of the things we do speak about in our agreement, in our curriculum, all over the map, in our curriculum is the concept of learning how you deal with conflict. So there's a time to deal with conflict. If it's a heated situation, you had a bad day at work. So just a simple thing. I could ask this to different people. You have a bad day at work. What do you want? You come home, whatever happened. Some people want to talk about it. Other people just leave me alone for a half hour. Let me have a break. And we'll talk about it afterwards. It's the same thing with any conflict. You have a conflict going on. Now is not probably not the right time to talk about the conflict. Put it aside. But you must go back to it. Just deal with it when everyone cools down. That concept, by the way, works a tremendous amount in the divorce. When I deal with people, I understand there's an emotional piece to the divorce.
Imagine in mediations, it can get heated sometimes.
My job is to get into the people's minds. I need to understand the emotion that they're dealing with. If I can get to the emotion, and when I need them to use their brain, which is, by the way, the concept of the prenup, you sign it when your brain is here, not when your emotion is there. So when your brain is there, you could make certain decisions. I call it practical decisions. I owe you $10,000. I don't want to pay you. You could take me to court. Is it practical? No, it's going to cost you $50,000 in lawyer fees. So I still owe you the $10,000. Sometimes we have to be practical, certainly in mediation of any divorce, and that will happen regardless. You go to court, you go to Bez Din. At some point, no one will get whatever they want in an agreement. It's a negotiated settlement, and you have to be practical. So that's, in marriage as well. You need to be practical. You're not thinking right now. You're hot, whatever happened, whether it's home or elsewhere, something was said. So how you deal with it? That's an amazing piece of how we speak about it in the curriculum. But if you don't know how to deal with that certainly will lead to a bad marriage. We spoke about the concept of lack of commitment to marriage, that without a question. Infidelity is a major issue, certainly as we get into marriages that are longer term marriages. It's a fact of life. Intimacy is probably, to me, it was actually shocking. I spoke to many professionals, Rabban and whatnot. They say that is probably the number one issue of difficult marriages. And again, it's part of what our curriculum, what we're trying to accomplish. Sexual abuse or other abuse of a child, traumas that happened to children, very often will have an effect on later on in marriages. I mean, these are things that Amudim and other organizations talk about, but they talk about it at the time that it happens to children. We're seeing the damage to that in couples when they get married. If there's any kind of emotional, verbal, physical abuse in the marriage, unfortunately, it happens, quite often. Personality disorders, mental health issues, things like that years ago, they probably were like, talk to your little youngest, to take to your grandparents' generation.
Momo's younger?
Momo's young, absolutely. So But
I'll take it.
You'll take it.
You really think he's younger than
me? No, absolutely. Okay, good. So, but you know, when you talk about years back, and again, right, Ben did speak about this concept on our video, years back when there were issues, and there were plenty of couples that had their issues, they didn't have the great marriages, they kept it quietly, they dealt with it, either they had a great, you know, they lived together, whatever the case may be. Today, it's out, it's more open, it's more understanding, and it's not okay to live with these situations. I will tell you, I did save quite a number of marriages, even, and I think that's probably, to me, something I really hold to my personal esteem in much greater, higher esteem than all the divorces that I do. I wish I could save marriages, and Baruch Hashem, I've saved quite a number. People don't know about those things because we just don't talk about it. The divorces we know about.
How would you save? So, give me a situation where it was
I have to be a little careful on it, but I'm glad you brought that up because there's two pieces that I think are incredibly important. There are consequences to our actions when we do things at the beginning. So when I have a couple, and I'm going to give some a story that actually happened right before Yom Kippur this past year. A couple with three children, and they were the wife was in a hospital for something the husband did, and the parents wanted to go get a restraining order, which is something that happens way too often in divorces, where they go ahead and they get restraining orders. Once you start, that's where the forest fire starts. So there's a consequence to it. Now, there are times you need to do a restraining order. And unfortunately, there are times that people end up in jail for things they've done. But just realize that there's a consequence to the action. And that's something that if I can get to people before they do the action, I try to at least go through with them what the potential consequence is. And more often than not, they'll think twice about doing that action. Again, there are times that you have to do it, and I'm sensitive to that.
Can we stay on this just for a moment? And I think this goes to the parental alienation topic that we touched on earlier, just to take another step into that topic, because I think someone actually challenged me to do whatever we can to educate the masses that there's a lot of sitra achra, there's a lot of the dark side that creeps in when couples are navigating this challenge. And there are, whether it's lawyers or other professionals that are very familiar with the system, and they know that if a restraining order is obtained, or if an arrest even is obtained, then it just fast-tracks the outcome that they're looking for. And I've heard from people on the inside that professionals will advise their clients, loyalenu, mizon l'shvisin, we should not know from such pain, but they will advise their clients to smash their head into the mirror and just call the cops and you'll get exactly what you need. And if this information is making its way into our communities, it's upon us to educate the professionals, the clinicians, the rabbanim that are dealing with cases on a daily basis, that there's a way to go about this and you don't have to listen to that terrible influence.
You're speaking my language. I wish I can get there. This is really the point of my coming here and constantly speaking to groups. This is the message that I give. There's a consequence to that action. I will tell you that will not get you anything fast. It will, most of the time, cause you a problem with getting the get. It will, assuming that the woman did it, sometimes the man could do something like that as well. Those things in court cases do not. And I think that's one of the myths out there. People think the court system is the way to go. Putting halacha aside, Mishnah certainly talks very strongly against going to court in that case. And you don't want to talk to the Gedolim about that. But putting that aside, you have a head to the go, you don't have a head to the go, whatever it is. Talk about practical. It's not the way to go in most of the cases. It will really protract that case for years. Most of the cases then end up in court. People think court's the way to go, and I'm going to finish in 1, 2, 3. Most cases in court will settle at some point. And the reason it'll settle is because people will lose their stomach and they're not going to continue to fight. They spent hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I tried to get them early enough before they start the fight. Most of the time when they don't listen, they come back to me and say 2, 3, 4 years later, I wish I would have listened to you initially. It cost me X and Y and it just doesn't stop. And at that point, they can't even get out. They need the other side to get out. So again, there are cases that you have no choice to go to court, but rave for the cases. You really should settle out of court, settle with Menschlich. And when you talk about alienation, I'm very, very big into those issues. I work, there's actually an organization called Broken Ties. I don't know if you're familiar with them. They actually deal with many women who have been alienated from their children. Not to say there aren't men. There are plenty of men as well. I believe they do have a division or someone working with that as well. But the one thing I'll tell you, that there are cases that, and I heard a share on it recently, and obviously you need Gedolim, you need Paiskin that could help you out through it. There are some parents who are just not qualified and create a tremendous amount of trauma for their children. It's a very bitter parsha. I'm actually involved with the case now that I really am not against the parent that's the alien, that the children are being alienated against. And I'm trying to get them. We have what's called reunification therapy. Reunification therapy is a very specific therapy that they actually use in court. They're not sitting and getting involved with your case and deciding you're right, they're right. They send you to therapy and they work on it. There's some good professionals that work on reunification therapy to work healthy, to work with the two sides, to get them to a point of seeing, is there something to do to reunify those children with the parent? To touch upon a lot of what to put it into perspective of the saving of the marriages and the marriages that we were able to save, it takes a person the ability to say, and I'm not saying it's easy, certainly if I'm 50, 60, 70, and I've had those type of ages that I dealt with, where I have to acknowledge that I need help. It could be I'm a great person, but I'm not connecting properly to my child. I'm having issues, whatever the issues are, and I want to change. That desire to change is the difference in most of these cases, in my opinion. The desire to change is the way you can potentially get help. If I want to change, I go to therapy and I change. The problem is that most people don't want to change. Certainly if I'm 50, 60, 70 years old, this is who I am. That's the story. But if you want to reconnect with your child, whether you're 35, 40, it doesn't make a difference, where you're not dealing with your child in a healthy way, even if the parent alienated them, and it happens sometimes, if there's somebody involved who's a professional, that person will help them reunify in a lot of the cases. Not all the cases, sometimes they're poisoned, but a lot of the cases they'll help them reunify, but it takes a willingness to say, I want to change. And that is a tremendously difficult thing to do. I did a marriage, it was about 40 years, where the parent was, it really had a anger issue. And all the children were married and the children didn't want to speak to the parent. I don't want to go through the details. It's personal information and whatnot that I don't want to bring out, but I'm trying to bring out a point. This was a pretty hush of a person, whatever it was, and he was willing to acknowledge that he had an issue. He went to a tough therapist who cracked him, but he really, like I told him, I said, just by you saying, I'm willing to change, you just hit a grand slam.
Oh.
You know, you went, you changed, and he connected with his children. The kids sent me pictures and videos from the parents' 40th wedding anniversary. This was a couple who was separated. The children were all against one of the parents. They had a 40th wedding anniversary with all the children because the parent that had the issue went for therapy and got help.
Wow.
Nobody knows about it. The children, and this is another very important point, the children told me they're sick of living this fake life and they're going to go and just tell people, like, this is crazy, I don't want to deal with this. And I begged the children, this doesn't go to the street. This is your family issue. Even if it's difficult and painful, don't take it to the street. And that's what saved this family. Too many times people take things to the street. You know, as I was saying, I said this on the other podcast, I think it's important to reiterate, I call TMI. Too much information. What are you giving me so much information? You know, we all have these things that people come over to us. And that happened to me. There was a family issue with someone I knew, it was about 15 years ago. And a guy came over to me and starts talking to me about the family issue. I'm like, what are you telling me all this stuff? What are you giving me all this information? Whatever you want to talk about. But, you know, this is something that I think it's important for us to scratch our heads. If someone's giving us this information, they're not doing this the same Shemayim. What are you telling me all this? So these are things that I think are important to talk about. I do believe that we could save a lot of marriages if we do things properly.
Well, thank you.
We got to take you up on your offer for a bracha on your birthday.
I'm going to give you the bracha off here. It's going to be a much better bracha. Oh. But I'll give a bracha to everybody.
Yes.
And I think the bracha really is that if Klal Yisrael really focuses on our message, do things b'shalom. This is really for everyone's benefit. It's shalom bayis, shalom divorce, whatever it is. We're going to save a huge amount of families. We'll save a huge amount of children. All this trauma that we're talking about dealing with, and I will tell you, when you talk about Rav Vigla, and I think it was a very valid point, I would be shocked if these children that were the ones that really went and became the great children came from anything other than a healthy divorce. If there was fighting and killing, those are the children that typically, maybe I should end with this thought. I was at a Beis Din recently. Every now and then I help. It sounds I don't get paid for my time, by the way. I do this all for free. I'm thrilled. I'm happy to do it. Chas de Hashem. I was at a Beis Din and the dayan turns to the mother and says, and it gave me pause for thought. He says, I'm going to ask you a question. I want you to think about it. If you knew that in 6 months, your child will be off the derech, would you be doing this divorce right now? Now, it happens to be in that particular case, I believe that that couple had no choice, certainly at that point, but to get divorced. But maybe we have to pause and think about that. You know, it's something to think about. We have an achrayus to our children. And if the achrayus is, even if we have to get divorced, how to get divorced, and we focus on that, I tell people, you know, you're going to the street or whatever it is you're talking about, these children have to get married. What do you want from your children? They have a hard enough time getting married when they come from a broken family. If the people hear, well, there was such fighting and this was the allegations and who knows what, you're destroying your children.
Well, really, just to end with that point, it's on everyone who's listening to this, that if the information comes to you, it should stop by you. You don't pass on information about somebody else. You don't gossip about other people's situations. So if, unfortunately, it got to you somehow and you're not involved, the buck stops there. 100%. If you don't tell it to three other people, it could not go further.
Even if you have your opinion on that.
Even if you have your opinion.
Yeah.
And all of the time and effort that you spend on helping mend a broken situation and all of the avelos that you put into the pain and the difficulty of these families, Zoyche v'roya b'vinyana. We should all merit the building of the Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi.
And I'm going to give an amen as my bracha for my birthday.
Amen.
Amen.
Thank you so much for listening to this important episode of the podcast. Share it with a friend because they might be able to benefit from an episode like this. So go ahead and share this with a friend. Yes, you guessed it. Stories of Hope is coming out with another podcast this Sunday night. Head to Stories of Hope on Apple, Spotify, Google, on YouTube, where our last episode of Stories of Hope has over 52,000 views. An amazing episode with Tzipora Gredko this Sunday night. Stories of Hope. Make sure you tune in to that. And of course, a big thank you, because we are posting so much mental health content here at Meaningful Minute, thanks to our friends at Serenity. Serenity and the Friedler family have come together and said, you know what, Nachi? Mental health is super important, and we need to make sure that everyone knows that they are not alone. Like Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson said, I too suffer from anxiety, and we are creating content for you to live stress-free lives, to bring down the anxiety level. It's really important. So we want to thank Serenity Center. We want to thank the Friedler family for coming together and making that happen. Of course, Serenity, the number one mental health clinic out there. They take most forms of insurance. They are amazing. If you want to find out more about the Serenity Center and how you can benefit from them, you're going to go ahead and email pause@serenitycenter.com. That is pause@serenitycenter.com. Maybe you, your child, wants to get enrolled with a therapist there. Maybe you want to find out if they take your insurance. Reach out to pause@serenitycenter.com. Of course, thank you so much for listening to this episode. We have another one coming your way next week at Meaningful People Podcast. Rate, subscribe, like, comment. Thank you so much, everybody, and I'll see you again next week.